A passage from James, the first chapter, page 812 in the Pew Bible. James chapter 1. Verses 19 and 20. Therefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. We as human beings are complicated creatures. We, on the one side, are emotional in our reactions to things. We tend to act impulsively on how we feel about a given thing. On the other hand, we are creatures of reason. We try to examine a particular circumstance and to see it according to facts or according to logic and try to respond appropriately. Our emotional side is extremely powerful. Sometimes we find ourselves not so much acting as reacting. Something happens, the natural impulse is to respond in a given way, and that's the way we respond. And when we act instinctively, when we act on an emotional basis, I'll have to say, it can be very satisfying. Because we have this tremendous psychological urge that we feel the need to satisfy. And when we satisfy it, it's sort of like lancing the boil, you know. The pressure is released, and boy, I feel good when I just say or do what's on my mind. The problem with it is it's often the wrong thing to do. I am amazed. I have criminal justice background and training. That was my degree. And so I tend to watch some of these realistic police shows that are on TV with something of a sense of sympathy for what those fellows are going through, but amazement at the same time. These fellows are facing the bad guys, and the bad guys are shooting back, and the bad guys are often shooting back with bigger guns than the good guys have. But these fellows have to walk into any number of circumstances that could be a threat to their life. They're walking in the middle of people fighting and arguing. They walk in the middle of dangerous robberies, or they stop a vehicle that's got tinted windows. And would you like to be the one walking up to that vehicle, not knowing who's inside or what kind of firepower they've got, why they were weaving all over the road, or why the dispatcher told you, yeah, that car is a wanted car. It's been reported stolen. The person in that car, so far as we know, has a warrant out for their arrest. And so with people screaming in their faces and abusing them verbally and sometimes physically, getting into fights, and then having to face the bad guy's gun, it would be understandable, wouldn't it, for these fellows to just respond on an instinctive or an intuitive level. And yet, they're trained. They have to go through all kinds of procedures and repetitive training to help them overcome the natural response out of perhaps fear of their life or frustration because somebody has injured them in some way, but to overcome all of that and continue to try to act rationally according to department policies or according to the law, as the law may limit the power that a policeman can use in a given set of circumstances. And so emotions can be very powerful, but yet even in a physical setting, we understand that emotions need to be controlled. They need to be reined in. And certainly we would live in anarchy, in chaos, if everyone simply gave vent to their emotions. I'd intended, when I started thinking about this lesson, to just preach about bridling our emotions in general. And the more I really got involved in my study and my thoughts, I really found myself naturally gravitating toward one particular expression of our emotions. And that is, I would really like to spend the time this morning on anger. I think that it's probably an emotion that we've been on the giving end of as well as the receiving end of. We can read James, the first chapter, and we'll be reading some other passages along the way this morning that inform us, as we probably already know, of the danger that unbridled anger can do, and yet sometimes it just keeps sort of popping up in our lives. We find it perhaps very difficult to control. In fact, one of the words used in the Greek language from which our word anger comes is orge, and W. Vine says this in his dictionary. Originally, this word meant any natural impulse or desire or disposition. But however, over time, it came to signify anger as the strongest of all passions. I don't know, perhaps that's debatable. I don't know how strongly I would want to debate it. It came to signify anger as the strongest of all passions. Mr. Trench, who is another Greek expert, says this about the same word, orge. After considerable development, thumos, which is another term from which our English word wrath usually comes in the Bible, thumos and orge came to refer to the passion of anger, the strongest of all passions, impulses, and desires. Again, another observation as to the power and the strength of anger. There are a lot of times in which these two words, orge and thumos, are used in the New Testament sort of interchangeably or synonymously. But yet, there are other Greek scholars that tend to see a difference in the two words. Origen, who is an older scholar, says thumos is incipient anger and displeasure fermenting in the mind. Orge, however, when thumos has subsided, is that which longs for revenge and desires to injure the one thought to have caused harm. In other words, thumos is just when I boil over and get really mad. Orge says, but I'm going to get you back. And we all know very well the thumos, the eruption, the frustration we may feel on occasion. But it's the orge, it's the settled animosity perhaps, or bitterness, or anger turning to hatred, really that causes so much pain and harm in the world in which we live. Now, psychotherapists have been telling us for years that when we feel certain things, it's just more mentally healthy for us to go ahead and give expression to it. I mean, that's the general psychological theory, is the damage comes to us by keeping things in. So the more we express how we feel, really the better off we're going to be. And I would just suggest to you that is not the way God looks at passions. That isn't what God says particularly about anger. And I think that probably most of us have been able to see by experience that the times in life where we've given vent to how we have felt about a thing without governing it by our rational thinking, without responding in a measured way, those are the times when most harm has been done. And so here's the challenge for us as human beings, regarding all of our passions, regarding all of the things we may feel intuitively or the things that we may instinctively want to do. The challenge is to try to govern that feeling and to govern that passion by what we know to be right, by our rational side, by thinking our way through something and trying to measure our response on a different level than simply it would feel good if I did this or said that. We just seem to be an angry people and growing, apparently, more angry. And I think that as a society and a culture, there's probably lots of reasons for that. I think part of it has to do with our wealth and the commerce, the kind of society in which we live, that we are engaged in trade and business. We're in the public arena and we're involved with other people in all of this to-ing and fro-ing that we might generally call commerce. But as we're all out to try to do our thing in this world, keep our job going, go to the bank, go to the grocery store, go to Walmart, do the consumer kind of things that we do, we're running into everybody else doing that. Sometimes literally. You know, we have what was it, the nation's third worst traffic? It was just in the paper the other day. I think we came in third or fifth or something like that. We were in the top five anyway, in terms of just wretched traffic conditions, with probably not much hope of it getting any better in the next 20 years, according to the projections that have been done. But boy, doesn't that just tend to set you off? When some other guy does the idiot thing. And here you are, you're in jeopardy, and your family may be in jeopardy, and here's, you know, the guy's in the fourth left-hand lane, and there he goes over the exit at the last minute. Boy, don't you just... grip the wheel a little bit tighter and, you know, think things, perhaps say things. Everywhere we go, there's a crowd. You can go to Disney in February. That's summer in South America. All the South Americans are there. You know, everywhere you go, there's a line. Everywhere you go, there's a wait. Everywhere we go, everything we try to do, we're just one of 100,000 other people trying to do it. And then there's sales calls at dinner time and incompetent people that we all have to deal with in this daily interaction. Computers that don't work, there's one. The wear them down mentality of companies, you know, health insurers do. They just reject your claim, you know, out of hand. Nope. So you have to call back and you have to argue your case. You have to keep up. You have to keep a file with all of your rejection slips in it from paying your medical bills until the squeaky wheel gets the grease, till you just basically beat these people in submission. I mean, we live in a society that encourages us to be angry because people will not respond the way that they should. They're going to make you get angry before they're going to do anything that you have the right to be done. And then we're overcommitted people. We're tired, and that's why lines bug us to death, and incompetence of other people bug us, because we're tired, we're worn out, and we're a prisoner of our schedule. We got things to do, we got places to be, and this person can't get their act together and do what just, you know, an entry-level position person should be able to do. And the whole cell phone beeper syndrome I won't go into. And then outside of those minor aggravations, we got more serious issues. I mean, those things can really set us off, can't they? But man, we live in a world, we got people taking children hostages and shooting them in the back as they're running and setting off bombs among them. Murdering people right in front of them to scare them to death and keep them in line. And we hear about this from all over the world because we got these satellites out in space beaming the bad news in. Not to mention what we've gone through in our own country, as memorialized yesterday. Vandalism. People who think what you've worked hard to obtain is freely theirs. Had a report several months ago, Terrell Bunting in Norway, working in Bergen, had a PowerPoint system stolen from their building, and some of you even contributed to help replace that. Well, guess what? Guess where the second PowerPoint went? But hopefully they think the insurance is going to cover it this time, which it didn't before. But just things, you know, that we have to deal with, perhaps not life-threatening, but certainly irritating. Things that we've gone to great lengths to try to obtain and make our lives better in some sense, and some clod doesn't have any more consideration but to break into my home or break into our place of business and steal what he didn't work for. Probably to sell so he can get another bag of cocaine. And then I've come to wonder, in all of these people that we might meet in our daily activities that just aren't very friendly and don't seem to have any consideration for the people that are trying to buy their services or whatever, I've come to wonder what's going on in their home that may make them react the way that they're reacting. Because, you know, as we've studied in our last quarter and we have sermons on from time to time, you know, marriage and family circumstances in our country are bad. They're just bad. And all of the stress and strain that people have at home, they get no peace, no joy, no happiness, no fulfillment at home. And then they go into the public arena to their job and face me, who's just wanting to get my tag. I just want to get my tag, you know. But you never can do that on the first visit. And, you know, people just see you walk up to the window and they're mad. Wonder what they came from that morning. Wonder what they're going through in their personal lives. Would you turn to the book of Jonah in the Pew Bible? It's page 624. Jonah was a prophet of God. He was a mad one. He was an angry prophet. And different prophets of God were angry over different things. They were angry over the sins that they saw in Israel or in Judah. Angry in a righteous sort of way, if you will. And I do think there's a righteous anger. I'll say something about that a little bit later. But they were bothered, rightfully so, by the disobedience and the ignoring of God that they were seeing going on among the people. Jonah had an anger. He didn't want to do what God was directing him to do as a prophet. Jonah wasn't going to his own people, though. He was going to the enemy. God wanted him to go to the enemy, to Nineveh, and preach to these people the way of righteousness so they might repent and God would spare them. And, you know, Jonah, not just because he's a prophet, but because he understands the signs of the times. He knows what these people are going to end up doing to his own people in the future. And they are going to treat them horrendously. They're going to come down into Israel, and they're going to take the people away and rape and rob and pillage, and it's going to be nasty. And God's telling Jonah, go preach to those people so they'll be saved. And Jonah doesn't want to do that. Sure enough, he goes to Nineveh, and they do repent. And God does spare them, and he gives them another measure of his patience. But then in chapter 4 of Jonah, in verse 4, then the Lord said, is it right for you to be angry? Is it right for you to be angry? That's a question we might want to think about for ourselves. Is it right for us to be angry? Whatever it is we may feel, perhaps simmering anger over, the things that just keep us on edge in life, and boy, we've developed a hair trigger and it doesn't take much to set us off. Is it right that we should be that way? God, later in chapter 4, produces an experiment, as it were, for Jonah. And the plant grows up to shade him from the heat, and he's thrilled about that. And God prepares the worm to destroy the plant. He's mad about that. And then verse 9, God said to Jonah, is it right for you to be angry about the plant? He said, it is right for me to be angry even to death. He angrily says. And then God is trying to get through to him that his anger is not appropriate. His anger is misplaced. He's not looking upon the people, even though they're political and religious enemies of Israel. He's not seeing them as people anymore. But God continues to see them that way. And he's trying to show Jonah that his anger is misplaced. And in our passions, we may feel justified when that anger is just simmering and we're just trying to grab onto something to keep us in control, and we can feel it building, and just about one more thing is all it's going to take. We might want to stop and say, is it right to be angry? And in our passion, we may say, yes, it's right for me to be angry. Look what they did to me. Look what's happening in my life. Of course I have the right to be angry. But yet, if we were to stop and examine the circumstance a little further and reason through it, we might be persuaded to say no. No, the anger is extreme. It's damaging. It's made the situation worse. No, I'm not justified in my anger. Turn to Ephesians chapter 4, page 788, the Pew Bible. I don't think anger is unilaterally wrong. That is, it's always wrong all of the time, regardless of why it's there. We are given a picture in the Scriptures of God being an angry God at times. And the anger of God is justified because it rests on divine principles. It rests on principles of justice and fairness and rightness and obedience, as God has the authority to establish those issues among men. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26, Paul says, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. The opposite of anger is not love. It is indifference. Anger is the boiling up of emotion. It's our passions rising, and we're responding in a negative way, in many cases, to what's happening in life. The opposite of that is not necessarily love. The opposite of that kind of passionate upwelling within us is indifference. And if we're merely indifferent about the things that are wrong and unjust that are happening in our world, then we're not necessarily behaving in the right way with those kinds of feelings. That's going to lead to inaction. In our apathy, we're going to do nothing about the evil that is around us. And so there are times where anger is justified. Our negative feelings are directed properly because of the circumstance, but that is not permission, as it were, for us to go around being angry. This is something that can get out of hand so quickly and out of control and well up within us that we find ourselves constantly, perhaps, out of control of those passions, while saying perhaps to ourselves, well, God gives me the right to be mad. Well, he says here, be angry and do not sin. Moderate the response. Do not let it turn into actions of transgression of the law of God. And then he further qualifies it, do not let the sun go down on your wrath. The danger of this righteous indignation that we may feel is that it becomes rooted in our hearts and it becomes cultivated in our automatic response to things rather than being governed and controlled by our rational side. And settled indignation sours our spirit. It darkens our understanding. We become bitter and angry at everybody. You ever seen somebody that's like that? And you know what we tend to say? Well, you know, old Joe, he's just angry at the world. What do we mean by that? Angry at the world. Well, there's a settled disposition within Joe that he can just be set off so easy. There's just this anger brewing beneath the surface, and you don't have to scratch very deep for it to all come flooding out. And Joe's mad at this, and Joe's mad at that, and Joe's mad at everybody. Joe's mad at the world. Well, that can become our outlook so easy because of the strength of these passions. So whatever Paul is saying in Ephesians 4:26 about anger, and I do believe there is a righteous indignation, but boy, it must be controlled. It must be governed. You've got to work to keep a lid on it and tie that thing down and don't let it get out of control. But there is a righteous indignation that's going to spur us to proper action when action needs to be taken. Indifference is going to tolerate sin in the congregation, never do anything about it. Sin is... where am I going here? We can be so apathetic about things that we just simply don't respond to the people around us the way that we should. We don't speak up and say, you know, that really is an affront to God. It's an affront to me. You ought not to be doing that. I mean, if we're just apathetic or indifferent, we're not going to take any kind of action where we should. But righteous indignation must be carefully governed. In Psalm 37, and there's so many good Psalms, and especially Proverbs. We're going to look at some of these Proverbs. But so many things in the Scriptures, Old Testament and New, that speak to the proper expression of these kinds of passions. Psalm 37 in verse... let's go back to 7 and 8. Psalm 37, verses 7 and 8. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm. This indignation, and this is against evil people in the context. We might call this a righteous indignation. But what he's counseling is rest and waiting and being patient and let the Lord work. Not that we shouldn't do anything against evil men, but the contrast is cease from anger and forsake wrath. We all know there's things wrong in the world around us. We all know that people are doing wrong. And it makes you angry. But we need to be careful how we handle that, and that it's not channeled in the wrong direction. Proverbs 30 and verse 33, "For as the churning of milk produces butter, and as wringing the nose produces blood, so the forcing of wrath produces strife." Wrath often leads to strife and division, and it makes things worse when expressed in an ungodly way. Back in James, the first chapter, where we started, let's go back and look at that verse just briefly. James chapter 1. The counsel is that we should be swift to hear, take in what's going on, listen to what's being said, observe what's being done, but be slow to speak and slow to wrath. I'm going to tell you, those two things go together. And I'm just, you know, you can examine your own heart, but I'll just tell you from personal experience, when I'm really agitated and I start talking, I'm in trouble. Because the more I talk, and the more I start giving vent to that agitation, it doesn't tend to ease it. It tends to inflame it. And if I'm upset, I'm bothered about something, and I really begin to voice that, I'm in trouble. Because it's going to tend to stir instead of quiet. Let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. When I'm mad, I am often going to do the wrong thing. We said that earlier. My anger and frustration is often going to lead me to say the wrong thing, to act in an overboard way, to exaggerate what I ought to really be thinking and feeling. We act impulsively when we're overflowing in anger, without taking the time to investigate God's will. I'd like to go into some of these in depth, but you can perhaps read them on your own. You remember when David was insulted in his men by Nabal? Boy, was he mad. Gird on your armor. We're going to go teach that guy a lesson. You remember what happened? Abigail intercepted him on the way. And I do a whole lesson on that particular episode. Maybe we can do that sometime. But it's an interesting study in Abigail to see how she diffused David's anger, because he was fixing to do the wrong thing. And she told him that in a very wise way. She persuaded David that if he followed through on his passions, he was going to sin. That what he was feeling and what he was about to do was not worthy of his position as God had anointed him to be the next king. But we act impulsively, and we do not do the thing God wants us to do. And two, when we just overflow in this kind of venting and this wild expression of our frustration, we may dishonor God in the process. We might want to vindicate ourselves so bad we forget there's a higher authority, and that's what happened when Moses struck the rock instead of speaking to it as God had said. He was so angry, so frustrated. Would anybody blame him for that? With the people he was having to deal with? But what happened when it was not controlled and it was not governed? It led him to dishonor God in the process. We may, in our anger, show our hypocrisy to other people. They're watching. They know we're Christian. They know that we feel very highly about the Word of God in times of worship. Perhaps we try to talk to them at our jobs and parents with whom our children go to school. And we've tried to portray a godly attitude, and then they see us explode. And our influence, perhaps, is ruined. Doing the will of God often requires self-control. It often requires patience, consistency, acting in love for others. Doing the will of God involves a host of things toward which anger is not correctly directed. We're asked to do so many things that anger becomes the monkey wrench and just fouls up everything that God may want us to do in that circumstance. So what we have to do when we feel the welling up of those passions is stop ourselves, slow to speak, whatever, count to 10. There's all kinds of ways in which people have suggested how to control or bridle anger. And some of us, we may have the genetic code. We might have gotten it from mom or dad or grandma or granddad. We've got an extra burden to deal with. But we've got to find a way in the will of God to control ourselves, to slow ourselves down, to subject the emotions to the reason and think our way through and ask, what would God have me to do or to say in this circumstance? I know, easy to say and hard to do. Turn with me back to Proverbs chapter 17, page 438 in the Pew Bible. Proverbs 17. Whew, that's pretty dark, isn't it? Wasn't that dark on my computer? That says, when I am the object of someone else's anger. Not only do we have to think about how we're going to respond when things tend to set us off, but what about when the other guy's mad? How am I going to handle that? Because if he's mad and I'm just boiling beneath the surface, I'm really going to get mad quick because he's mad and boy, here we go. So how am I going to deal with that? There are several proverbs and many other passages that help us to try to stay out of this situation in the first place. That's really the best way to deal with it, is try to avoid getting in the situation. Try to help other people not to be angry, as it were. Proverbs 17 and verse 14, the beginning of strife is like releasing water. Therefore, stop contention before a quarrel starts. Remember what we said about you start getting vent to your feelings, and what happens? It just starts spilling out all over the place. The beginning of strife is like the releasing of water. Try to stop the levee when the water's already breaking through. It's very difficult because that water is insidious. It's corrosive. It's eroding the levee faster than you can dump the dirt back in it. And so the advice here is to stop the contention before the quarrel starts. Chapter 19 and verse 11, the discretion of a man makes him slow to anger, and it is to his glory to overlook a transgression. There are just some things we need to let go. If we go through life getting mad at everybody for every act of incompetence we come across in our daily commerce, we're going to be mad all the time at everybody. It's just the nature of the world. Of course, I'm never incompetent, you know. It's always everybody else. Maybe that's something we need to think about. The discretion of a man makes him slow to anger. You see, it's the mind and the feelings again. The discretion of a man makes him slow to anger. He's trying to think his way through the circumstance. Chapter 22, verses 24 and 25. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man do not go, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul. We might find this difficult sometimes to reconcile with being a Christian. Because what the proverb is saying is there's some people we need to stay away from. As a Christian, we might look at this and say, well, that's the person I need to be around because I need to help him. I need to help the angry man deal with his anger. Well, there may be some truth in that. And we certainly must be ready to help other people who are struggling with spiritual issues or whatever. But I'm going to tell you, the proverb is sound. There's some people we need to stay away from. Of course, it requires honesty, doesn't it? If I'm around that person and they're a constantly angry person, I'm going to end up angry. And I'm going to end up in some circumstances I don't need to be in. And it's going to be bad for me. And that's what the proverb is saying. There's some people you need to stay away from because you're going to find yourself in turmoil or arguments. And I tell you, this happens in the Lord's church. It happens when there's a disgruntled brother and he's trying to get some other disgruntled people around him to be on his side. And if we're naive, we can get sucked into that kind of a situation. And lo and behold, before we know it, we're on one side or another of a division among the Lord's people. There are some people we need to mark and avoid, which is taught in Romans 16 and elsewhere. There's some people we need to look at and say, that person is trouble, and while I might have an attitude and a desire to help them, more often than not, I'm going to get myself in trouble in dealing with that person. And so often, it's the innocent and unwary that gets sucked in. to church divisions because they're too nice and too naive to realize what's going on and realize that perhaps they have allied themselves with an angry person. Proverbs 15:1, this is a classic. We all know this one. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Great proverb. Really hard to do. A soft answer turns away wrath. That means wrath is already being expressed. Somebody's in my face. Somebody's done something, said something, and they're mad. And my tendency is to be mad because they're mad. Or to think, well, they got no right to be mad. What are they being angry at me for? The reason Proverbs 15:1 is hard to put into practice is the wrath of the other person begins to inflame my own passions. And I've got to stop myself, slow myself down, look at the situation with reason and understanding rather than with the passions I'm feeling in return. But we become defensive. I'll put that guy in his place. He can't talk to me that way. So we become defensive or we're wounded, we're hurt. The anger has been expressed toward us in a very hurtful way. My natural response is just to come right back with something. Show him he can't talk to me that way. Or I may just be shocked. You ever had somebody you just weren't expecting? In a circumstance you weren't expecting? And I mean, lower the boom. Boom! You know, here it came. We got, where did that come from? Out of character, out of circumstance, and the tendency might be to hit back. We're shocked. We're caught off guard. So we go back to that instinctive thing. You know, that's what we do when we're caught off guard. We go back to our instincts. We allow our impulses to guide us. One more, Proverbs 14 and verse 29. He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts folly. It's very difficult to work at controlling these passions and governing them and having self-control. But I think one thing we need to try to do is look at the circumstance in a little bit of a broader perspective than what's happening at the moment. Number one, as we've already indicated, and I was obviously being facetious, we do make our own mistakes. We also put other people in places of frustration. We've not responded perhaps as we should in every situation. And if we would stop a moment and ask, you know, have I ever done that? Have I ever done something similar to that? One of the Proverbs, or maybe it's Ecclesiastes, speaks of hearing your servant curse you when he didn't know you were speaking. And the advice is not to take that too seriously, because what have you said behind somebody else's back? So if we would stop ourselves for a moment and realize that there have been occasions where we've all been caught in a circumstance where we have been the angry one. And if we can slow ourselves down and look at it from that standpoint, I have a bad day every once in a while too. And sometimes it can become a challenge, and hopefully in the right kind of a way, but when somebody's really said something to you or done something very offensive, the easy thing to do is just let them have it. The hard thing to do is try to find a way to calm them down and repair the relationship and kind of win them over. I mean, this can happen in Best Buy or wherever. Somebody's just mad about something, and it can become something of a challenge, and I think a righteous challenge if you look at it that way, a godly challenge. How can I calm that person down? A soft answer turns away wrath. How can I speak to that person in such a way, and really this may be, you know, Romans 12, heaping coals of fire on their head, but sometimes the nicer you can be to people that are reacting to you that way, you can shame them. Not that you just want to shame them, but sometimes you want people to see, look, you have been over the top. You've responded in a way you had really no right to. And how do I get a person to see the nature of their behavior? The soft answer often really is the way to do it. And to also look at the situation from this standpoint, what really is the object of this sort of confrontational thing that's going on here? Is the object for me to be vindicated and put them in their place and show them they can't do that to me? Or is it really to win a soul? To try to raise a soul to a higher plane of thinking, a higher plane of behavior, to help that person come to an understanding, even if it's a stranger, help that person come to an understanding, this isn't the way human beings ought to act toward each other. And to somehow recover that soul and try to pull them back a little bit from that angry edge, that line that they're walking, which will, in time, get them in trouble, and perhaps more serious trouble, if it's not corrected. As we bring our service to a close, I'll just ask, are you an angry person? I mean, have we been talking to you this morning? I've been talking to myself. I've just been letting you listen. But does this describe you? And I'll tell you, one of the dangers that really comes into play in settled anger and wrath and bitterness is, I think if we let that stay in our character long enough, we'll eventually become mad at God. And it could be that there's somebody here this morning. I know someone very well, known for a long time, who because of circumstances that happened 35 years ago, they got mad at God. They've been mad ever since. I hope that doesn't describe you, but perhaps it does. Maybe something's happened in life and you've considered it to be unfair. You thought God should have done something different to protect you or keep something from happening. May we urge you to think about that kind of feeling toward God. Ask yourself, is it reasonable? Is it rational? If God were to speak to you, would He ask you like Jonah? Jim, is it right for you to be angry at me? Is it right? Are you standing on solid ground to be angry with God? Perhaps to the point that you refuse to obey the gospel because God has disappointed you in some way. Please let the sacrifice of Jesus stand as the balance to that kind of anger. God has given us His Son so we can be forgiven from the anger and look at Him through eyes of love and not eyes of anger, no matter what's happened in life. We can't solve whatever has perhaps made you angry with God in a minute or less. But I would like you to think about it and to ask yourself, are you doing right to be angry with God? Is that where you want to be in the day of judgment? Or perhaps is there a way to look at your situation with more balance and broadness, that you might see the love of God and His concern for you instead of just being angry? Can we help you with any of that? Maybe as we stand and sing.